money. Quickly to Wall. Wall measures. Beal gets open for three. Dagger! They don't have any time.
Here comes Pierce with 5 seconds left. Pierce with three. Pierce with two. Pierce all the way up the horn. It's gone!
Morris, Ball, Beal, and Gortat. Porter can't find anybody. He gives it to Wall. Working against Bradley for three.
Hey everyone, welcome to your Thursday edition to Locked On Wizards podcast. Today we bring in a special guest, Becca Winkard, aka at Becca MVP on Twitter. She also does a lot of NBC Sports Washington's Wizards Hang Time pregame shows, so we're excited to have her on the air. And today we'll be talking about what's been most disappointing for the Wizards so far this postseason. There's a lot of different things to choose from, but we'll try and prioritize those. And then we'll also be talking about which Wizards team since 2000 has kind of been the scariest playoff contender. And of course, they haven't made it past the second round since, you know, back in like the 70s. But we'll talk about which modern team has kind of imposed the most fear in opponents' hearts. And then finally, former Wizard Gilbert Arenas had something to say about, you know, how everyone characterizes star players and that you have to be the one hitting those game-winning shots and you basically have to be Michael Jordan. And he defended LeBron James and a lot of other guys like Tim Duncan and Steve Nash who don't necessarily make those game-winning shots but still are the star players nonetheless and the franchise cornerstone. So we'll talk about what Gil had to say. Right now we're going to bring in Becca Winkard. And Becca, I've got to start out by apologizing because you reached out to me on Facebook and you said, hey, I heard you're starting a podcast or you're going to be, you know, the Locked On Wizards host. That's really exciting. Let me know how I could help out. And I kind of dropped the ball and gave you all these like potential BS administrative type things for you to do, essentially saying like, oh, yeah, you can get coffee. But I apologize. We're desperate for guests. We really want to have people hosting and taking some of the weight off me, so I'm really grateful that you're here to join us tonight for this podcast. It's great having you on the air.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to speak with you.
And, no doubt.
Excited.
So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself to start, just because it's your first time on this podcast? I know that we went to high school together back in the day, and you do a lot of different Skype-ins and podcasting and have a huge Twitter presence and grew up in the area. So can you just tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, for sure. I started being a Wizards fan when I was young, very young, because I actually wanted to be a WNBA player, but unfortunately that didn't work out because I'm pretty short. So I decided that watching basketball and following the NBA would be the next best thing. And my dad's been taking me to games since I was very young. And Gilbert Arenas is kind of the person who got me really excited about the Wizards. Before, I would just go to Mystics games. But when I saw him play, it was like, okay, I'm done. Like, I'm going to be a Wizards fan forever. But, yeah, so now I interact with the Wizards community online. The reason why I joined Twitter was because I don't have a lot of friends who follow the Wizards or, you know, will be willing to, you know, go to a game with me and sit there while I scream my head off. But it's just, you know, it's just really nice to know that there's other fans out there. And since I joined a couple years ago, I've been doing things like other podcasts and also Wizards Hang Time and Overtime, which is the pregame show. I'll Skype in and interview with them. And it's just really awesome to interact with the media as well as the fans. So it's just, I kind of feel like I'm getting the best of everything.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it's great to have you here. And we're going to dive into our first topic, which I'm sure you can talk for hours about, but we're asking what the most disappointing facet of the Wizards' two postseason games against the Raptors, both losses, have been so far. And for me, I think three-point defense has been terrible, allowing 16 in the first game. And I think they shot about 50% in that first game, then 38% in the second game. But the Wizards, after allowing 16 threes, in game one. They allowed 11 in the first half of game two. There have been some other disappointments. We haven't seen Tomas Satoransky or Marcin Gortat show up too much. Center position right. and interior defense, rim protection has really been a weak spot, along with perimeter defense. So defense as a whole is not looking too good. And then also, I know that it's not really Otto Porter's personality to be aggressive and want to score, but he has shot the ball fairly well. He just hasn't taken too many shots in these first two playoff games. So you would like to see him go off a little more and just more consistency from the bench, because the bench played extremely well. They had 63 points in game two, but I think just 21 or 22 in game one. So those are kind of my pet peeves, and it has a lot to do with rotation. So a lot of it falls on Scott Brooks' shoulders as well. I don't know what he was doing with Tim Frazier and Tomas Satoransky in at the same time in game one. And it was not a bad call, but an interesting call that Ty Lawson was the first guy off the bench. Obviously, he had a big game in game two. So yeah, I would say the biggest thing is just, you know, getting their head in the game defensively and getting some sort of impact from the center positions, even if that is, you know, just Markieff Morris and Mike Scott both having good games, or Porter sliding over to play the stretch four position. What's been pissing you off the most, Becca?
Well, I'd have to agree. I mean, it's basically everything you just said, to start with, I guess, the three-point, you know, defending the three-point line better. You know, the Raptors, they have all those guys, Wright, Miles, you know, DeRozan. Like, they have all those guys, including bench players, who can shoot the three, like, you know, very well. And it's just stressful because, you know, sometimes those shots from those types of guys are going to be unavoidable. You know, if they're hot and they're, you know, getting their open looks, like, there's nothing we can do about it. But the fact that, you know, from the Wizards' defensive effort, it's just not there. Like, you know, they're not, like, you know, looking to see where the ball is moving, and they're just not defending, you know. Like, it's almost too easy, because if you see how the Raptors play offensively, it's like they're doing the same three-point play every single time, and it's almost like the Wizards aren't expecting it, like, the way they're playing. Like, they don't see it coming, and it's just stressful. Something else that upsets me is also Otto Porter, because, you know, we know he can shoot threes, and he hasn't been shooting them
right
as much. And I think that's stressful, because it's just like, you know, we have to look for him. You know, we have to give him the open look. We have to try to get him that shot, because we know he can shoot those shots, and he shoots shots, you know, when we need them the most. Same with Kelly. You know, it's, I mean, ever since, you know, maybe about a month ago, he hasn't been very consistent offensively, and sometimes he'll make careless mistakes on the defensive end. And, you know, it's just those, there's a lot of little things with each player that I feel like, you know, we had the talent before, but for some reason it doesn't translate well, and it hasn't been translating well. So I would say the three-point, you know, defending the three-point line, I think getting, you know, players to be offensively consistent, and just, you know, it's like when you don't have defense and you don't have offense, you know, it's not going to work. It's right. Just that's it. So I mean, it's so frustrating. Like,
yeah.
You know exactly what I'm talking about. So it's just, you know, just seeing a team that has so much talent and so much potential just crumble, you know, it's just so frustrating, like, as a Wizards fan, because we know how far they can get. And last year, we know what they did in the playoffs, and we all expect better. And it's just very stressful, beyond stressful.
Right.
So,
and, you know, you've got to give the Raptors credit at the same time, because I think them
absolutely.
And the Cavs are probably the best two teams in the Eastern Conference because of the Celtics' injuries. And Philadelphia has, you know, they've shown some weakness against the Miami Heat. You mentioned Otto Porter, and, like, it's kind of been a knock on him throughout his career. He's got a lot of potential, but doesn't, sort of fades in and out of games and doesn't aggressively look for a shot. I don't think that's going to change now. He might, I mean, I could see him continuing to develop, but, you know, being a more dominant scorer doesn't necessarily strike me as his personality per se. So last game he shot 5 of 10, which isn't bad, and he didn't take a single three, only 2 rebounds and 2 assists. 12 points total. He also had three steals, which was good. And then in game one, 4 of 7, so once again shooting over 50%. That game he shot 3 three-pointers, made one of them, finished with five rebounds, an assist, a steal, and a block, and 9 points. So it's not like he's, you know, dropping a goose egg, but you would just, you know, it's only like the Wizards are losing by 8 points, 11 points. So if he could just score, I don't know, like 5 more points, take maybe like 3 or 4 more shots, that's basically all I'm asking. In fourth quarters, essentially, like, we've seen how much Bradley Beal and John Wall have struggled in the fourth quarter, especially game one. So it would be nice if someone else could take on that burden. Markieff Morris played great in his first game, but then did next to nothing because he's just kind of been so inconsistent the past couple of years, only 6 points in game two. It's really tough, and you would love to see Oubre kind of jump out and have another finish like he did offensively in game two. 14 points, he shot well, 6 of 11, also five rebounds, a steal, and a block, but just his defense, it's not like he played bad defense, but still, when you give up 37 points to DeMar DeRozan, it's, you know, like, it's kind of a wash if you're scoring 14 points, because it's, I mean, you know, unfortunately, he's one of the best shooting guards in the league, and it's really tough to contain him, but 37 is way too high of a number for any individual player on the Raptors, and especially when they have such incredible contributions off the bench, in my mind.
Right. I don't know if you felt this way yesterday when watching the game, but, you know, I felt at some point the bench was making such a great run, and I found that the bench was contributing so well that when they put back in the starters, I was just like, I was disappointed because it was like, I feel like the bench was keeping us alive almost in that game and alongside with John Wall. But if, you know, if you look at the starters and their offensive, you know, scoring yesterday, Keith Morris, 6 points, Gortat, 0 points,
right,
Bradley Beal, 9 points. And it's like, you know, Lawson, 14, Oubre, 14.
The bench outscored the starters 63 to 119 minus 63. What is that, like 54, 60? I'm not 100% sure. We'll have that answer for you after the break.
Yeah, well,
but yeah, it's 63 is more than half of 119. I know that for sure. Okay, it's 57 and 63. I'm going to stop embarrassing myself with this
math. But you know what? Your math is better than mine. So it would take me like a good 5 minutes to process that. So maybe in 5 minutes I'll have the answer. But it's just, you know, it's crazy because our bench isn't known for, you know, keeping us alive in games. And this is an intense playoff game versus the number one seed. And, you know, they're all just killing it. And, you know, the starters are just kind of, you know, flaky. So it's really strange. And, you know, it's great that the bench is, you know, contributing. But, like, had the starters, you know, added those few extra points, I feel like we would have been in it.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that's for sure is this offseason the Wizards have to re-sign Mike Scott. He shot incredibly well, 20 points in Game 2, 14 in Game 1, hit 7 of 10 shots in Game 1, and then also 7 of 10 in Game 2, so, and 4 three-pointers in Game 2 as well. So he's showing up big time in the playoffs. It would be great if he had Jody Meeks' 2-year deal instead, but he's just got the veterans' minimum contract. So, yeah, definitely a player the Wizards need to bring back, no doubt about it. We're going to take a real quick break from Locked On Wizards podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, some of the various playoff teams that the Wizards have boasted. Well, not too many, but since 2000, and it's been about 7 teams. We're just going to chat about, you know, who is the most fearful opponent and which Wizards team kind of looked like a team that you'd least want to face in the playoffs. So once again, the guest tonight is Becca Winkard at Becca MVP on Twitter. I'm Noah Goetzel, Noah_GOETZEL, and the Locked On Wizards podcast is coming right back. All right, everyone, we are back with more Locked On Wizards podcast here on Thursday. If you don't already, be sure to subscribe to Locked On Wizards on iTunes and Spotify, Stitcher, where else? Google Play. And check us out on Twitter as well, at Locked On Wizards. We post the links to all of our podcasts, and you can also find those on LockedOnWizards.com. So my name is Noah Getzel. I'm your host. We're here tonight. Sorry, today. I get confused with these times. With Becca Winkert. And we are talking about which playoff team is kind of the most fearful. And I feel like the current team is more developed than the other playoff teams in this John Wall, Bradley Beal era. But they're just such a loose cannon that they could beat anybody and they can lose to anybody. So I don't think they're getting my pick for the most dangerous playoff opponent or playoff team in the recent Wizards, you know, modern Wizards era since 2000. In my mind, that honor actually goes to the 2014-2015 team because I feel like they were, you know, one dirty play by Jeff Teague away from advancing to the Eastern Conference Finals. That was the team that featured Paul Pierce, Nene, Gortat had, you know, a few years before he was, you know, actually a considerable contributor as the Wizards swept the Raptors and took the Hawks to six games. And just the swag factor of having Paul Pierce, a guy with a championship ring who was played a lot better in the playoffs and talked a lot of trash and just struck fear in opponents' heart. You can only imagine that if John Wall didn't have that broken wrist, the non-displaced fractures, the Wizards would have been in the Eastern Conference Finals and probably would have given LeBron a good run for his money. That's my take. So that's the 2014-15 season. Becca, what do you think? Which Wizards team have you been most excited about come playoff time throughout your fanhood?
Well, I would have to choose. I would have to agree with you, first of all, because I think it was really like a game changer for us to have Paul Pierce, you know, like a veteran that can just lead the team and show John Wall, you know, Bradley Beal, everybody, you know, who has potential to be the team leader the way, you know, how it's done. And seeing him, you know, make that shot that unfortunately didn't count, that was so exciting. Mm-hmm. And he really knew how to make, you know, the team gel and work together in the playoffs. And if John Wall didn't, you know, mess up his wrist, I agree that it would be perfect. You know, I really think that we would have gave LeBron trouble having Paul Pierce on the team. But I'm going to pick the 2016-2017 team. Okay. And the reason is, even though, you know, they didn't have the veteran leadership, I feel like we were so close to the conference finals. And I just think the core was gelling better that last year. And Wall was, like, at the height of his game. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's really important that the team leader is, you know, setting, you know, basically putting the team on his back and just, you know, set an example how to, you know, be encouraged and get ready to face their opponents. And, you know, John Wall, I mean, it was fun watching him in the playoffs. I don't, you know, how many times do we see him flex or, you know, scream, "This is my city," you know? It's just like, it was so fun. And like, for me, being at Game 6 was just, like, the best moment of my life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, it's, like, I'd pick both of them if I could, so.
For sure. And, you know, it's one thing that really irked me about that year, and technically it happened after the Wizards were eliminated from the playoffs, but just the fact that they, Wall and Beal said afterwards, like, okay, LeBron is lucky that he's playing the Celtics.
He didn't want to see us.
Yeah, they don't want to see the Wizards. Like, you can't say that if you lose when you win, you know, like, of course it went to seven games, but still, like, if you lose, you can't be like, okay, well, they're lucky that they didn't play us. No, like, you guys aren't skilled enough to win a series, so you need to shut your mouth and go fishing, essentially.
You need to go back to the gym and figure this out. It's, yeah. You know, something we've also struggled with this year, it's just talking when we should be proving how scary we are and how threatening we are in the Eastern Conference instead of just saying it. Because, you know, if you say something and you don't back it up, you know, you just look silly. So
right.
It's definitely, it was kind of strange to hear that, you know, LeBron didn't want to see us in the playoffs. Well, it doesn't really matter because we didn't even make it.
Yeah, another team that really could have, you know, done some things if they weren't facing LeBron was the 05-06 Wizards. They lost in the first round to the Cavs in six games. in 2006. I'm not quite sure how far the Cavs advanced. I think they lost to the Heat, who ended up winning the championship that year against Shaq and Flash, D-Wade. But that was the year that Gilbert was averaging 29.3 points a game, and I'm pretty sure it was the same year that he had a walk-off buzzer beater just about every game. And we're going to hear later in this podcast about what he has to say about how good a player you are if you're making those game-winning jumpers versus, you know, supporting the team throughout the game. And I'm sure it's kind of funny to me. We'll talk about this in a sec. But as a guy who's consistently hitting game winners, you would think that he'd have more stock and more value and, you know, like higher regard for that those types of players. But we'll let you know exactly what he says coming up in just a minute. Do you feel, this is kind of a long shot, but in the 2001, 2002 teams and 2002, 2003 teams, especially the earlier team when Michael Jordan averaged 22 points, the team wasn't good. That's a fact. 37-45, finished fifth place in the Atlantic Division somehow. That's kind of surprising. But do you feel like if Jordan would have made the playoffs, would it have been a competitive series? I don't even really remember who was good in, like, 2000, 2001. I think, like, the Lakers won the championship that year to maybe the New Jersey Nets. But do you feel like Jordan in the playoffs would have been a guy capable of carrying the Wizards into, like, at least a first-round victory and some sort of run? It was him, Richard Hamilton, not much else. Chris Whitney averaged 10 points a game. Courtney Alexander. Tyronn Lue. Okay, so he wasn't on the Lakers this year. He must have been on the Lakers the previous year when Iverson stepped over him. Who else? Hubert Davis, Christian Laettner, Popeye Jones, Jahidi White, Brendan Haywood, young Kwame Brown, 19 years old, Etan Thomas. Yeah, there was not much talent whatsoever surrounding Jordan. But I don't know. Like, he did a lot in that All-Star game when it was hosted in D.C. He was, you know, going mano-a-mano with Kobe. It would have just been fun to see Jordan back in the playoffs. Obviously, he was, like, 39 years old, so who knows what he had in the tank. But I did mention every team 2000 through present, and while this team didn't make the playoffs, I, for one, no matter who I was at that time, I wouldn't want to see Michael Jordan. I wouldn't want to guard him. I wouldn't want him on me, for sure.
Absolutely. And I just feel like, you know, if we were somehow able to make the playoffs, you know, the fact that, you know, it's Michael Jordan, you know, he has six championships under his belt. And even though, you know, he was 39, you know, pushing 40 at that point, I think he, just the experience and knowing, like, you know, what it takes, I think we would have made a great playoff run. And I think he really brings the best out of everybody. So
I don't know. He didn't bring the best out of Kwame Brown.
Well, I mean, I think he can work with people in a way to give them an edge. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a tough-minded player, for sure.
There's some players that you can't fix, like Kwame Brown, but I think, you know, he would have brought the intensity, and it definitely would have been something to watch. So.
Mm-hmm. It would be great to see him, you know, like mentoring John Wall or Kelly Oubre or Brad Beal, guys who just have that fire in their heart the same way. I absolutely think, you know, the question wasn't who was the best team since 2000 in terms of Wizards playoffs. It was who was the scariest opponent. So who would strike fear in your heart? And if you're going up against Michael Jordan, like, you know that this guy is the best competitor to ever play. So that's someone you wouldn't want to face, but obviously that team didn't make the playoffs, and I just read through their roster, and nobody was good except for Richard Hamilton. So we're going to take one more quick break. In our final segment, we're going to be talking about Gilbert Arenas' latest Instagram video and his kind of questioning the traditional belief that the best player is the most clutch player. So we'll come to that in just a second. Again, Becca Winkert and Noah Getzel here with Locked On Wizards, and we'll be right back. Hey, Wizards fans, welcome back to the Locked On Wizards podcast. We are wrapping up here with one final segment with our kind of funky, he's kind of like that weird uncle of the Wizards now, I guess, Gilbert Arenas. Obviously, he had a bit of a strange dismissal from the team and then didn't really play in the NBA too much afterwards, so Gilbert went to Instagram and posted a really long-winded I guess not like a rant, but like he was stating his mind, and basically he said the media and fans, especially fans, want your superstars to be Michael Jordan. They want you to be the guys hitting the clutch, you know, go-to shots in the fourth quarter, but they're not always, even though they're not always that, they can still be the most valuable on their team, the most valuable on their league. They can still be a superstar and a legend, even if, you know, they're not necessarily the most clutch players. So he gave the example of LeBron back when he was on Cleveland the first time, and later on where he had closers like Mo Williams, Dwayne Wade, and Kyrie Irving, because he, like, his skill set wasn't quite the same as Jordan's. He wouldn't really, you know, he could hit step back threes later in his career, and when he has a full head of steam, nobody can stop him. But he kind of mentioned, like, the quick live dribble, like, once you start bouncing the ball, he doesn't quite have the tight space ability that Jordan had, to kind of just, even that guys like Carmelo had, and Joe Johnson and Sam Cassell. So a lot of players who you wouldn't typically associate as being superstars, guys like Lou Williams and Jamal Crawford, who play, you know, a very important team. I mean, a very important role in terms of being clutch and kind of rounding out the nucleus of a squad. So in your mind, do you feel like that's an accurate description, that you can be incredibly clutch, but still not, I don't know, like a star player? And along the same vein, you can be an incredible player. You can be a guy like Tim Duncan who shuts someone down defensively, yet you're not actually the clutch performer who's going to have the ball in his hands. For that Spurs team, it might be Manu Ginobili instead. Do you feel like Gil is raising a good point that people don't think about?
Absolutely. I mean, just, you know, every player has, you know, their biggest and best skills, but not, you know, not every star player is going to have everything.
Right.
You know, like, it's just kind of like, for example, like, if you want to compare it to the Wizards, it's like, in terms of, like, being clutch, you know, obviously our star player is John Wall. And even though there are some crucial moments where he's clutch in a sense where, you know, he did make that game six winner shot, and also, you know, during crucial moments, he knows where to pass the ball and things mm-hmm. like that. But shooting is not his, you know, what he's good at in the clutch. So it's like, if we needed someone to shoot the shot last minute, you know, at the final.
Yes,
you know,
who do you want shooting? Everyone's waiting.
Yeah. We would, I feel like there's so many other players that would, you know, on the team that probably would handle it better, because, you know, just like, you know, shooting is a skill, passing is a skill, you know, speed is a skill, defensive efforts and blocks is a skill, being clutch is a skill, and it's, you know, being able to take the, you know, handle the pressure of taking that last shot, and, you know, knowing that you're a great shooter and you're going to make it. It's like, it's a really difficult skill, and not every single player is going to have it. And I don't think if a player doesn't have it, it doesn't make them not a star.
Right.
It's just, you know, you want the person, just like, you know, if you want John Wall to have the ball in his hands a lot because he knows where to pass it, and he knows how to give the Wizards offensive, you know, movement. But, you know, in terms of shooting, like, who's the best shooter on the team? Who do you, you know, who can handle the pressure? Like, mm-hmm. they should be shooting the clutch shot.
So exactly.
I have to say, I kind of agree with Gilbert.
For
as
once.
As crazy as his opinions can be sometimes, and as wild as his rants can be, he's definitely not wrong on this one.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's definitely a lot of, I look at big men, especially, like, dominant centers like Shaq. If there's a second and a half left on the clock, like, what is Shaq going to do? He's not going to catch and, like, hit a fadeaway, you know? Maybe
catch
he can throw
uh-huh.
an oop or something. But, like, if there's 1 second on the clock and all you have time for is catch and shoot, of course I want John Wall throwing that pass. I trust him to make the best decision, but I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't want him catching, you know, a falling away three. I would want someone like Otto or Beal, or even possibly Oubre, who's got, you know, the most swagger that I can ever imagine. I'd want him, you know, having the confidence to step up and hit that shot. And you know, Wall has embraced his role as a facilitator, an elite defensive player, and even at times a rim protector. He can be a scorer too, but you know, when you can't in the NBA, it's really, really tough to score layups in the final clutch seconds. The refs usually swallow the whistle. There are too many bodies in there. You need to be able to hit a jump shot at the end of the game, and that's something that John Wall needs to continue to work on. It has been a pleasure having you on the podcast tonight. It's been about 30 or so minutes, so I think people might be tired of listening to me at least, probably not you since it's your first time, but I really appreciate willingness to come on and give the people what they want tonight and keep those WNBA dreams alive. You're not 30 yet. You've got a couple years left. You just keep working those ball handling, keep working on your agility, keep dunking. You'll be in the NBA in no time. I mean, WNBA, one of those, whichever you want.
All right. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to practice at the elementary school across the street, for my summer. It's like, the NBA has their summer league. Well, I'm going to have my summer league over at the elementary school. So if anybody wants to challenge me, like, you know, let me know. So
Wolf season's coming. Don't you guys wait. That'll do it for tonight's Locked On Wizards. I will be back tomorrow with Locked On Raptors host Sean Woodley. We're going to talk about, you know, how the Raptors have been able to be successful so far and what might change in the series as it comes back home to the nation's capital for games 3 and 4. Even though the Wizards are down 0-2 right now, keep in mind that the remaining 5 potential games would be at Capital One Arena. And even though they weren't great, the Wizards weren't great at home, it's definitely got to be an edge in their mind playing in front of their home crowd and not having to worry about Drake heckling them from the sidelines. So tune in for that on Thursday night. We will have more for you, more coverage. Make sure to subscribe and tune in on Twitter and follow Becca at BeccaMVP. Follow all of the Wizards Extra and Locked On Wizards family. And that'll do it for us. Thanks again, Becca.
Thank you.
All right, good night, everyone. I guess it's why last winter she got so cold on me. She said, yay, keep making that platinum and gold for me. You think about me now and then? Start again. But if you really cared for, then you wouldn't have never hit the airport to follow your dreams. Sometimes I still talk to her, but when I